we discussed an overview of the shortest and one of the most important chapters of the Gita, the 15th chapter, that has 20 verses in it. So, some stream sound, is it okay? Hare Krishna, am I audible? Okay. So, how we'll do it is, those of you have Gitas, we'll read the translations one by one, then I will speak about the verses a little bit. Maybe some points we'll discuss from the purports. We'll focus mainly on the flow of the Gita to understand what actually the Gita is doing. How Krishna's thoughts are flowing in the Gita. That is what we'll try to understand here. So, you can start with 15th chapter, first verse. You like to read? You can just read the translation.
The Supreme Lord has said, "His presence here is an inflexible permanency that stretches its roots upward and its branches down and gives us a relationship upon which to stay the load of the river."
Okay. So the first five verses describe the tree of material existence. Now, the spiritual truths are often very difficult to understand with material mind and intelligence. That's why in his Sarva Samadhi Niritika, Jiva Goswami explains that there are 10 ways of acquiring knowledge. So he first describes all 10 and then he condenses the 10 into 3. So Prabhupada kept things simple for us. So he explains the 3 pramanas. And he describes how most of these pramanas do not give us perfect knowledge. So, within Anuman Praman, one of the pramanas is called Upama. Upama is analogy. Now, no analogy is ever perfect. But analogy gives us an indication of the nature of reality or nature of the particular principle that is being taught. So, upama is very frequently used in the scriptures. And when the upama is used, it is implicit that what we are doing is having Shakha Chandra Nyaya. All of you know Shakha Chandra Nyaya? Shakha is branch. Chandra is moon. The child is not habituated to seeing up, to see the moon. Where is the moon? Where is the moon? He says, "Do you see this branch?" The mother says, "Yes." Okay, "Do you see this trunk?" Okay, "Do you see this branch this way?" Okay, "Do you see the branch that way?" "Yes." "Can you see the shining object in between?" He said, "Yes." "That is the moon." "Oh, that is the moon. Now I'll climb up on the tree and catch the moon." But if he climbs up on the tree, he'll not get the moon over there. Why? Actually, there is no connection between the branch and the moon. But for the purpose of aiding the child to see the moon, an artificial connection is created. So, we have to be very clear when we communicate analogy, what is the purpose, what is the point we are conveying through the analogy. You will see that for the standard body-soul, we use the analogy of car and driver. But when we take the analogy of chariot body, the soul shifts from the role of the driver to the passenger. When the intelligence becomes the driver. So, in each of these analogies, something specific is being taught. On the other hand, there is the analogy of the tree and the birds. So where the bird is not directly connected with the tree, he is not activating the tree, but he is residing in the tree. So all Bhagavad Gita is the analogy of the dress and the person. The body is like a dress. So each of these analogies conveys a particular purpose. So the car body analogy conveys how the source of activity is not the body but the spirit, the soul. The chariot body analogy conveys the mechanism of how the soul should use his intelligence to direct himself in the right direction. The tree and bird analogy conveys how along with the soul there is a super soul. But the super soul is not attached to the body, as the soul is. The cloth body analogy conveys, the cloth person analogy conveys how the body is temporary. And we should not lament discarding the body. So there are different analogies which are used to convey specific points. So now Krishna in this particular verse uses an analogy to explain the nature of the material world. So he is using the analogy of a upside down banyan tree. Urdhva moolam adha shakham ashvattham prahur avyayam. Imperishable banyan tree. So we know that this refers to a reflection, because where do we actually see a real tree? We don't see anywhere. It's a reflection. And he is describing that this tree is avyaya. Ashvattham prahur avyayam. Avyaya means this material world is also imperishable. How is it imperishable? Because it may sometimes be manifested, it may sometimes be unmanifested. But it will continue existing. However, as he will describe later verses, that we don't have to stay forever here. But the world will stay on. Just like the jail will not be there forever. So the prisoner doesn't have to be always in the jail. Although jail will continue to be there. So, urdhva moolam adha shakham ashvattham prahuravyam. Chandamsi yasya paranani yastam ved savedavet. Here Krishna takes a very significant step forward in taking us beyond the Vedas. He is telling that chanda means the meter, the metrical verses which are there in the Vedas. They are the leaves of this tree. So, now, the leaves generally give the flowers and the fruits. So, what are the flowers that will come? They are the dharma, artha, kama, moksha. By chanting the Vedic mantras, following the Vedic mantras, one gets the fruits. But Krishna is making very clear over here that actually, if the tree itself is a reflection, then its leaves will also be a reflection. Its fruits and flowers will also be a reflection. So therefore, it doesn't say one who knows the Vedas is Vedavit. One who knows the leaves, he says, Vyastam Ved. When you understand the full tree, he is a Vedavit. The difference is that just by knowing the Vedic mantras, one doesn't become Vedavit. Because the Vedic mantras are only one part of the whole Vedic master plan. And that's why we see in the 10th canto, in chapter 23, where Lord Krishna favors the wives of the Yagic Brahmanas. So there, the Brahmanas themselves knew the Vedas and they were chanting very nicely, but they were not Vedavit. Yastam, Krishna will come to this word, Vedavit, a similar word, Sarvavit, later on in the same chapter. So now Krishna continues the analogy in the next verse. You can read the translation, second verse.
The branches of this tree extend to downward and upward, nourished by the three modes of material nature. The fruits are the objects of senses. This tree also has roots going down, and these are bound to the wicked actions of human society.
Yes. So, now every tree is nourished by something. So, what is it that nourishes this tree? It is the modes of material nature. There is water. Now there is another tree, which is the Bhakti Lata Bija, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talks about. And that is nourished by what? Shravana Kirtana Jala Karaya Sinchana. That is a different tree. So their hearing and chanting will nourish that tree and cause it to grow. But this tree, the three modes of material nature make it grow. And Krishna adds another thing over here. He says some branches, now first he is saying the branches go down, the roots come up. But now he is saying some branches go down also and some roots come up also. Why? Because the modes work in very complicated ways. So within material existence, somebody, when he is affected by the mode of goodness, relatively he will come up. Within the material world, somebody who will be up, may, when he is affected by the mode of ignorance, go down. So Chakravarti Pad, in his commentary to this chapter, explains that the root from where the tree is growing downwards, that root is Brahmaloka. And from there the tree moves downwards. So the branches, the outermost branches are like the lower planets. And the nearmost branches or the uppermost branches are higher planets. So, adhasya urdham prasruta tasya shaka guna pravruddha vishaya pravala. Vishaya pravala means that the twigs are the vishaya, the sense objects. That means this whole tree, its fruit is sense gratification. So, Shankaracharya in his Lakshmi Narasimha Karunaras Sutra takes the same analogy further. So, this analogy is consistently developed in the Vedic scriptures. The 10th canto, 2nd chapter, when the demigods are praying to Krishna, at that time also they develop this analogy further about the tree. It will take a whole class to explain this analogy itself, so we won't go into that. But Shankaracharya basically what he says? సంసార వృక్షగబీజమనంత కర్మ శాఖాయుతం కర్ణపత్రమనంగ పుష్పం ఆరోయ్య దుఃఖ ఫలిలం పతితం దయాలో లక్ష్మీ నరసింహ మమ దేహి కరావలంబం. దిస్ ఇస్ సంసార వృక్ష సినిమా. అఘ బీజం, బీజం, వాట్ ఇస్ దిస్ సూయిడ్? దట్ ఇస్ సిన్ఫుల్ డిజైర్. వి హావ్ అఘాసుర్, ద సిన్ఫుల్ డిమన్స్. అఘ మీన్స్ సిన్. భుంజతే త్వేత్ య అఘం పాపా. సో ద సిన్స్ ఆర్ వాష్డ్ అవే వెన్ దే ఆఫర్ ప్రసాదం, ఆఫర్ భోగ అండ్ టేక్ ప్రసాదం. సో అఘ బీజం, ద డిజైర్ టు ఎంజాయ్, ద సిన్ఫుల్ డిజైర్ ఇస్ ద రూట్ ఆఫ్ ద ట్రీ. అండ్ చక్రవర్తి పాల్ ఎక్స్ప్లెయిన్స్ దాట్ బిఫోర్ ద 15th చాప్టర్ ద 13th చాప్టర్ ఇన్ 13.22 దర్ ఇస్ అ వెరీ ఫేమస్ వర్స్. పురుష ప్రకృతి స్థోహి భుంక్తే ప్రకృతి జాన్ గుణాన్ కారణం గుణ సంగోస్య సదసత్ యోని జన్మసు. దాట్ ద సోల్ గెట్స్ ఎంబెడెడ్ ఇన్ మ్యాటర్ బికాస్ హీ వాంట్స్ టు ఎంజాయ్ భుంక్తే. సో చక్రవర్తి పాల్ ఎక్స్ప్లెయిన్స్ దట్ దిస్ ఇస్ ద బీజ్ ఆఫ్ మెటల్ ఎగ్జిస్టెన్స్. The tree that will be described by Krishna in the 15th chapter, how does that tree start? That starts with the bija. That bija is this verse. This verse describes the mentality which causes this tree to grow. Now every tree is reflected on something. So like that, the tree has to have a seed by which it grows. It needs water and then it starts growing. Vishaya pravala karmanu bandhini manushya loke. So now the karma bandhan is not for the lower species. The karma bandhan is only for the manushya loke, for the human. So here we are accountable. You know, there are inbuilt reactions to all our actions. They may manifest over a period of time, but they are all inbuilt. So now, after describing this in a little enigmatic way, Arjuna has more questions. What is this tree actually? Then Krishna explains that don't try to complicate your mind too much. You won't be able to understand everything. Can you read the next verse? Third, fourth together.
The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. But with determination, one must cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. Thereafter, one must seek that place from which, having gone, one never returns, and there surrender to that Supreme Personality of Godhead, from whom everything began, and from whom everything has extended since time immemorial.
Yes. So, Krishna is saying two things in this verse. First is, na rupamasyeha tato upalabhyate. Rupa will not be able to understand. Upalabhyate, you will not be able to understand. Where it begins. Sometimes if you have seen an old banyan tree, it has one root, but then it has sub-roots which grow down. And sometimes sub-roots also grow so thick that you will not be able to discern which is the actual root. And sometimes you can cut one thing and still the tree keeps growing in other places. So, therefore, it is very complicated. Na anto na chadir na cha sampratishta. Where is the beginning? Where is the end? Where is the foundation? You cannot find it. Therefore, asanga shastrena dudhena chitva. So, cut it off. Don't try to understand it. Like sometimes, you know, people, devotees get sometimes bewildered. How did the soul form from the spiritual world to the material world? So, you know, there are some answers. But Jayadev Maharaj wrote one article. He says, don't figure it out, get out.
So, you know, important, more important than saying why we fell is how we can get out.
So therefore, asanga shastrena, by the weapon of detachment, dudena chitva, cut it off. So Krishna describes how, now earlier he has said in the first verse that this tree is imperishable. Now he is telling, cut off the tree. So the tree is imperishable, how can it be cut? So Baldevi Devotion explains that actually the tree cannot be cut. But we can cut our entanglement with the tree. So the material existence will continue, but what incriminates us in material existence is our own desires. Therefore, to the extent we become detached, to that extent we become unaffected by the material events and material happenings. And then this chapter is entitled as Purushottam Yoga, the Yoga of the Supreme Person, Prabhupada translates in English as. So Krishna makes things very clear. The reflection is a favorite analogy of the impersonalists. But the very idea of reflection indicates that there is some reality that is reflected. Otherwise, see, reflection requires three things. You know, there has to be a reality, there has to be a reflecting medium, and there is to be an observer of the reflection. Isn't it? So, in addition to the reflection, these three things have to be there. But if there is only Brahman, then where is Brahman reflected? And who is observing the reflection? That's why the philosophy becomes very inconsistent. And they try to get around this by saying it's all anirvachaniya. Anirvachaniya means it is not expressible in words. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains it's achintya. Achintya means it is inconceivable. So God is simultaneously having form and not, and as also impersonal. How is that? How can the same person be both? That is inconceivable. But anirvachaniya, we don't consider the absolute to be anirvachaniya. Actually, he is sarvavachaniya. And all words are meant to glorify him only. And if you say that he is anirvachaniya, then the first thing the Mayavadi should do is stop using any vachan. Why do they speak so much? Isn't it? So it's not anirvachaniya. Like Krishna makes the same thing very clear. Okay, you cut off this tree, but what do you do after that? Tattah padam tat parimargitavyam yasmin gatana nivartanti bhuya. So first thing he says, then find out that destination from where you will not fall back. And there what do? In that destination? Tam eva chadyam purusham prapadde. Surrender to that supreme person. Yataha pravritti prasruta purani. From whom his whole material nature is expanded. So, he's talking about eternal destination, and within that eternal destination he's saying you have to surrender to the supreme person. So, therefore, this is a very strong refutation of Mayavad. Because the Mayavadis, they also may do deity worship. But their idea is that you do deity worship to merge with the deity. Once you go beyond illusion, then there's no need for the deity. But what Krishna is saying over here? No. Actually, after you go out of illusion, you surrender to the deity. So it's a complete refutation. And now, after describing this, actually there's a very logical thought flow in the Gita. So Krishna has told you should surrender. Prapadde. So then Arjuna has a question, how should I surrender? That he describes in the next verse. Indeed.
Those who are free from false prestige, illusion and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are free from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom.
Yes. Prabhupada writes, the purport is the surrendering process is very nicely described over here. So, nirmana moha jitasanga dosha. Nir means without. Mana and moha. No pride, no illusion. Jitasanga dosha. How are this mana and moha created? See, moha means, I want to be the enjoyer. And man means, I want to be the controller.
So, there are two brands. There are materialistic people who are in illusion, they say that I want to enjoy this manifestation. And there are the other kind of enjoyers who want to say that I want to become God.
Nirmana moha. So no man, no moha. Jita sanga dosha. How are this idea of man and moha coming? Because of the association with the material modes. So jita sanga dosha. And how is that possible? Adhyatma nitya. One should always be conscious that I am spiritual, I am not material. I have got nothing to do with material things. And Prabhupada, the next word is vinivritta dosh, vinivritta kamaha. And Prabhupada translates as, I am to be done with lust. You know, the word done is very powerful. Sometimes, you know, you get, in some movies you might have seen, somebody gets very frustrated with somebody. I am done with you, get lost. Prabhupada says, done with lust. Krishna is also very emphatic over there. Vinivritta, what is nivritta? Retired. So, vinivritta means retired with no chance of going back. Vinivritta. Vishesh Rupre Nivritta. Permanently retired. So actually, Prabhupada says in one lecture that, you know, we are all serving lust. And lust is a very bad master. Makes us work very hard and gives us very, very little pleasure. More than pleasure, it gives us suffering only. But, although it gives us so much suffering, we don't want to give up the service of that master. So the first problem is we don't want to give up the service of that master. And sometimes, even if we want to give up the service of the master doesn't want to give us up. So because of which, we are held on. See, the Vedic culture says that, you know, if a man and woman get married, there should never be any divorce. But the Vedic culture says, if you want to have a divorce, that divorce should be between matter and spirit. spirit should stop wanting to enjoy matter. That divorce is what Vedic culture specializes in. So, you know, Vedic culture is the culture of divorce. But it is a divorce not at a material level. It is a divorce at a level of freeing the soul. Vinivritta kamaha. So what binds the soul, like earlier I said, purushaha prakriti stohi. That what binds the soul to the body is the desire to enjoy. So, if you want to be always adhyatmanitya, then we have to be done with lust. Now, how it is possible to be done with lust? The very similar things which Krishna talks about in the Bhagavad Gita, he also talks in the Uddhav Gita, in the 11th canto. It's a very beautiful section. And there, Uddhava asks Krishna many questions. So, Krishna, what is suffering? And so there Krishna answers very brilliantly. He says, Dukkha kama sukha peksha. So, expecting pleasure from sense gratification itself is misery. Dukkha kama sukha peksha. Why? Because as long as we are expecting pleasure from the senses and sense gratification, we are always dissatisfied. When will I get it? 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 And that itself is agitation. You know, we can, the whole modern civilization teaches us that sex and lust are the sources of enjoyment. But if we look, even from a material point of view, the most carefree and joyful people are the children. They have no lust. So if lust were the source of happiness, how could those who have no lust seem to be so happy? On the other hand, we can ourselves, if we look back at our lives, we can see how, as lust starts getting triggered, our innocence and carefreeness start getting lost. We become very calculative. So, actually, if we can taste, even temporarily, freedom from lust, then we will have tremendous peace of mind. We can get some glimpse of it by thinking about how we have been freed from some of our other bad habits. For example, some people are just addicted to drinking tea. And then, you know, they go to office, 3 o'clock they are supposed to drink tea. From 1 o'clock when they are taking lunch only, they are thinking, when will I drink tea, when will I drink tea? So, that is just agitation. So, there is dukkha kama sukha peksha. So, that's what, whatever material desire we have, we are expecting pleasure. Actually, Prabhupada writes in one purport that the pleasure of sense gratification is only in the planning. I'll get it one day. But actually, it gets over in a few minutes. So, but that agitates our mind, preoccupies our mind, and eventually frustrates us. Therefore, dukkham kama sukha apeksha. That in itself is reserved. A devotee decides, I will not have any apeksha of happiness from this. Then he becomes peaceful. Then the mind becomes free to think of higher pursuits. Therefore, if you want adhyatmanitya, there should be vinivritta kama, be done with lust. Of course, that is easier said than done. When the sort of process, you know, to give up sex desire is easy, to get the desire to give up sex desire is difficult. Because for a devotee, you know, there are so many pleasurable activities to do that if we want to, we can give it up. But what happens is, the propaganda is so much from the media around, and especially from the media within our own mind, that how it happens is that we should not be discouraged if this desire we are not able to control. Because, you know, in our previous lives, most of us, we have, at least I have come from the lower species, we can see it from our own minds. So, in the lower species, there is only pursuit of sense gratification. So, the mind and senses, you know that the subtle body stays the same when we go from one body to another. The subtle body has the momentum of sense gratification coming from the previous life. And that's why, you know, if a car is moving fast, it has a momentum. Even if you press the brake, it will not stop. It will take some time to stop. But modern society, far from teaching us to press the brake, teaches us how to press the accelerator. So actually we become more and more mad. And even in this life, we may have pressed the accelerator for quite a few years. And now, last few years, we have started pressing the brake. But we press the brake and in between we release it also. So, because of that, the car doesn't stop. But we can think about our own life. You know, for some desires, we just press the brake, thak. For example, we might have been eating meat earlier. And when we decided to practice Krishna consciousness, finished. We press the brake, now you see that there is no momentum. Actually, if we travel in train sometimes, some people eat meat, you know, at least for that desire, we can say, you know, spit at the thought.
What Yamanacharya says? We can actually do that. He says for sex desire, we can do it for the desire for eating meat. We actually feel distasteful. Just want to go away from there. Don't want to smell it also.
So, the fact is that Krishna consciousness can free us from material desires. But, we have to apply ourselves. And by seeing how we have been freed from some desires, we can get the hope and the faith that we will be freed from other desires also, which may be more deep-rooted. So, we have to apply ourselves to the process. Dvandvair vimuktaha sukha-dukkha sangyair. And if we want to be nivritta kamaha, if we want to be free from lust, what we should be? We should be free from duality. Duality means, this is good, this is bad, this is man, this woman is good looking, this woman is not good looking. This duality is there, but actually it has got nothing to do. So, Prabhupada would say that, especially when his Western disciples came to India, you know, in one sense the Indians were impressed. But on the other side, especially in Vrindavan, they were not received very well, because they thought, who are these Western lectures? So, you know, what happened was, when they would go to purchase something in Lohi Bazar, Shrutakirti was recently in Pune, he was telling, that, you know, they, if we went to purchase something, they would tell us, put the money on the counter, and we'll pick it up from there. They didn't want to touch us. So, but Prabhupada said, when they told this to Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, see, they want your money, but they don't want to touch you. That means your money is pure, but you are not pure. See the mentality. This is the mentality of a, Prabhupada said, a cobbler. Indians are cobblers, Prabhupada said. They are seeing the skin, they are not seeing the heart. So, actually, we also get very caught by the appearances. We may not be discriminating between Vaishnavas based on white or black, but we get caught by the skin color. So, it is just actually a bag. The body is just a bag. And, you know, it's because of certain pigments being a certain color, certain pigments being in the body, certain color is there. But that color is not the source of pleasure to anyone, although it may appear like that to us. So, we have to go beyond that duality. And how do we go that? Dvandvair mukta sukha dukkha sangye. Sangye means equal voiced. I don't care whether there is sukha or there is dukkha. Why? Because I know I am aiming for something higher in life. Now imagine, suppose you are preparing for an exam. You are thinking, I have to prepare for this exam now. Then, you know, the few days before that, you don't really, it doesn't really matter what food you get to eat. Right? If you get food, fine. If you don't get food, that doesn't matter. Why? Because your focus is somewhere else. So like that, Radha Maharaj says in one lecture, you know, if you are running so fast towards Krishna, you won't be able to see what is around us. But if you think you are going for a morning walk, then you will keep seeing everywhere else. So, if you are fixed in moving towards Krishna, then whatever happens in material life, we can be equipoised. Sukha dukkha sangyair. So it's a very systematic process of how we should surrender. Six stages is healing, and each of them is a causal link in it. And then if such a thing has happened, then what will happen? If these six stages are there, kachanti amudha padamavayam tad. Padamavayam, that imperishable word will attain such a person, because he will be amudha, unbewildered. And then after that, now there is very interesting dichotomy in the Bhagavad Gita, where sometimes Krishna refers to himself in the third person and sometimes in the first person. Third person means, see, I is first person, you are the second person, and he is third person. So, Krishna is telling, you should go to that imperishable abode. Surrender to that person. So now, Arjuna is a little confused. What is happening over here? So, which person do I surrender? Because it was just, Krishna has already said, you know, aham sarvasya prabho, I am the source of everything. So, actually there are two reasons why Krishna does this. One reason is out of humility. He doesn't want to say all I all the time. There is a story of Prabhupada also. When they wanted to make in Vrindavan, the palace of gold for Prabhupada. It was Mayapur, they wanted to have a big building for Prabhupada. No? Not the Prabhupada Samadhi Mandir, the quarters which they are there in the, I think, conch building, the other side, the lotus building. They wanted to build that for Prabhupada. Prabhupada was staying in the building. Prabhupada said, Prabhupada, we want to build a big building for you. Prabhupada said, not required, I can stay here. Then everybody was very disappointed. They wanted to serve the Prabhupada. Then they thought, and then they came back and said, Prabhupada, we want to build a nice quarters for the spiritual master. So, yes, you can build that.
what is Prabhupada saying?
Prabhupada doesn't want anything for himself. But when the disciples are offering service to the spiritual master, by that they will make advancement. So like that, Krishna does, as a matter of fact, speak his glories in some places. But doesn't keep all the time saying, I. He actually says, surrender to that Supreme Lord. Another reason for this is, one is humility, and the other reason is, that at a subtle level, the Bhagavad Gita differentiates between Paramatma and Bhagavan. So, the Paramatma is Krishna and is also not Krishna. Because Krishna is not the administrator. Paramatma is actually once in the administrator. So therefore, Krishna sometimes refers to when, especially he's talking about interacting with the material world, he talks about the Paramatma. And in that sense, he will refer to himself in the third person. That's why, before 18.66, where he says, Mam ekam sharanam vraja, before that, four verses before that, in 1862, he says, Tam eva sharanam gacha, sarva bhavena bharata. Surrender to that super soul who is in the heart of all living beings. But in Arjuna again gets a little confused. Then Krishna says, I'll tell you the most confidential knowledge. And then he says, forget everything, just surrender to me.
So here also.
So after talking about verses 1 to 5 talk about the tree of material existence. Verses 6 to 10 will talk about transmigration. That means, how the soul gets caught in this world and how he can come out of this world. So because he has talked about the spiritual world and going to the spiritual world, he starts from the spiritual world and comes down. So the next two verses, next verse talk about the spiritual abode of the Lord. Can you read? 15.6. Sixth.
That supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world.
Yes. And now his first time in this chapter used the word my abode. So that spiritual abode is actually my abode only. And he describes it in a little poetic sort of way. That is not illumined by the sun, the light, or the sun, the moon, or fire. Now, Prabhupada adds the word electricity. Somebody wonder, how can Prabhupada add electricity like that? It's not said over there. Where is?
It's not there.
Actually, in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, there is a similar verse where actually the word is there, Vidyutaha. Actually, it is there. So, in one sense, what Prabhupada is doing is not wrong. But even if that Vidyutaha was not there, see, Tamal Krishna Maharaj did his PhD about Prabhupada's theological contribution to world theology. So, he took many instances like this and he said, Prabhupada is not translating a text. Prabhupada is translating a tradition. He's not just translating a text. He's translating a tradition. His goal is not just to accurately, from a Sanskrit point of view, tell what this text is, what was in Sanskrit, what is in English. His goal is to tell people how this text was the basis of life for people in the past and how it can be the basis of life for us now. So, that's what Prabhupada is doing is, he's translating a tradition. And translating a tradition means, he wants to communicate to people in a way in which they can apply and live in their lives. For example, Prahlad Maharaj is saying in the 9th chapter, where he's talking prayers to the Supreme Lord. He's saying that, senses are attracted to different things. So, the eyes are attracted here, the legs, the mouth, tongue is attracted here, the ears are attracted here. So, Prabhupada says over there, the ears are attracted to radio songs. And the tongue is attracted to halwa.
Now we wonder, will Prahlad Maharaj say there were radio songs? So,
Prabhupada, if you just talk in the traditional terms, people will not be able to relate with it. Prabhupada wants to explain to us what the practical implication is. So therefore, we have to always keep this in mind. Prabhupada is not just going in for linguistic accuracy. He is actually going in for traditional fidelity. That the tradition is continued. Whatever tradition was there in India, that tradition should be continued. So, Prabhupada, even if Upanishad Vidyutaha was not mentioned, it is there, it's fine. Now, Chakravarti Pad explains that this also has a deeper meaning. Now, one direct meaning of this is that the spiritual world is not a dark place. Material world is intrinsically dark and it depends on external sources for illumination. Where in the spiritual world, it's everything is self-effulgent, swaprakashaha. And therefore, it does not need any source of illumination. This does not mean that the sun, moon and the stars are not there. They are there, but there is no dependence on them. See, sometimes the scriptures may say there is no time in the spiritual world. But there is time in the spiritual world. In fact, all of Krishna's lilas are centered on time. There is certain lila in the morning, certain lila in the afternoon, certain lila in the evening, certain lila at night. So that's what Govind Lila Amrut describes the whole day of Krishna. Describes, you know, 5:21 to 8:23 Krishna does this lila. And then 8:24 to 9:33 he does this lila. So, actually in the very advanced stage, Ashtakali Lila Smaran. So at this time, a devotee remembers the lila that Krishna is performing at that time. So in the morning he will remember the Bal Lila, in the Vatsa Lila, in the daytime he will remember the Bal Lila, like that. That is very advanced stage of meditation. Now we should at least remember something. You know. But the point here is that there is time in the spiritual world. But why does scripture say there is no time? Because time does not control and destroy. Time is defined by these two characters in the world. It controls. You know, we may want to do something, but we run out of time. You know, and time makes us old. Right? Now, it described that Radharani's eternal age is 14 years, 5 months and 3 days. Something like that. I mean, not exactly. Now, the concept itself is mind-boggling. Eternal age.
So, what is the idea? That actually,
yes, Radharani has a particular age. Krishna has a particular age. Because they are now Yavana, so that they can reciprocate their love the best. But that is his eternal age. Krishna never grows older. Radharani never grows older. So similarly, there is sun, moon and fire in the spiritual world, but there is no dependence on them. To enhance the lila of Krishna, they will participate. So in that sense, they are not dependent. They are not present because there is no dependence on them. Chakravarti Pada explains, and this also has a deeper meaning. That if earlier he said that narupamasyeha topalabhyate, that the form of that spiritual world cannot be understood. That tree cannot be understood. So now he's describing it further that actually the sun, you know, these three, the sun, moon and fire, these three demigods are connected with certain senses. Sun is connected with the eye. The moon is connected with the mind. And fire is connected with speech. He says, fire is speech here. So like that. So he says that spiritual world cannot be seen with the eye, it cannot be described with the words, and it cannot be conceived or imagined by the mind. It is beyond the faculties of the senses. But it can be experienced by the heart ultimately. Of course, we will try to describe it a little bit in the spiritual world, in whatever way we can, but we cannot fully describe it. Yad gatva na nivartante tad dhama paramam mama. So, you know, all of us, we want, every interior person wants a permanent solution to the problems of life. That's why Krishna several times brings this theme. That once you attain it, you will never come back. You will never suffer. So, now, after describing this verse, Krishna now, okay, Arjuna, how did I end up over here, you know? How did I suffer over here like this? Then Krishna describes that. The identity and the predicament of the conditioned soul.
15.7. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to the conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with the six senses, which include the mind.
Mamai vamsho, they are my amsho. This is a very important verse in many ways. First way is, again it is, very strongly refuting Mayavad. Why? Amsha, it says, Mamai Amsha Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Eternal fragments. Eternal fragmental parts of Krishna. And actually, the Prabhupada often used the word part and parcel. So, why part and parcel? Part indicates the separateness, parcel indicates the connectedness. We are part and parcel of Krishna. And The second important part is manha shashtani indriyani prakriti sthani karshati. So that is karshati means karshan, not friction. So we either have karshan or we have akarshan. If you turn towards Krishna, sarva akarshati iti Krishna. If you turn away from Krishna, there is sarva karshati iti maya.
So we have either akarshan or karshan.
So in this world, what is happening? There is karshan. There is continuous friction. And actually the conditioned soul gets tired. But the problem is maya doesn't let him stay tired. He gets tired, but maya again energizes, gives him hope. So actually maya makes this conditioned soul frustrated. Again and again is pursuit of sense gratification. But she is so expert, she will never make the soul hopelessly frustrated. She will frustrate, and just when he's about, oh, give up. Enough now. He'll give him some hope. Oh, you can enjoy. Yes, I can enjoy. And immediately he'll suffer again and again. Says, I'll give up. No, you can enjoy.
So, like that,
the conditioned soul keeps struggling. Karshati. And how is it karshati? Manha shashtani indriyani. The mind and the five senses. So, actually, the mind is the engine of material existence. Engine means what? The engine is what makes the train move. So, like that, the mind is what makes the conditioned soul move here and there. Prabhupada writes, Prabhupada's purport is very profound over here. Prabhupada says, the soul is like handcuffed and tied and imprisoned in material existence. And then, manha shashtani indriyani. So he uses shashta indriya, six senses. Normally we talk about five senses. Yeah, now in the 10th chapter, Vibhuti Yoga, Krishna describes indriyanam manaschasmi. Among the senses I am the mind. That means Krishna is talking about the best of all things over there. So mruganam mrugendroham. Among animals I am the loin. So among the senses I am the mind. Mind is the most formidable of all senses. In the 23rd chapter of the 11th canto, there's the song of the Avanti Brahmana. So he says that the god-like power of the mind, very beautiful word, god-like power of the mind. Actually, for the soul who does not accept God to be almighty, his mind becomes almighty for him. And the mind can make us do insane things. Things which you normally never do, or even think of doing. Once we come under the spell of the mind, we start doing that. The mind makes a struggle. So the only way to become free from the control of the mind is to turn to Krishna. You know, either we obey Krishna or we have to obey the mind. You know, if we refuse to obey Krishna, we'll be forced to obey the mind. And if we want to disobey the mind, we have to obey Krishna. That is the only way. Otherwise, that's why Guru Mukha Padma Vakya, Chittate Kariyaikya Arana Kari Humanyasha. We obey Krishna by obeying the spiritual master. Now in the next verses Krishna will describe what is this karshati. How is this friction? How is this agitation going on? Yes? Who has not read?
The living entities in the material world carries these different conceptions of life from one body to another as the air carries aromas. Thus he takes one kind of body and again quits it to take another.
Yes. So, he is describing how the soul goes from one body to another. Shariram yadavapnoti yachapi utkramatishwaram. Vayur gandhan ivashayat. So, it's a very interesting analogy. Like the vayu gandha. So, what happens is, Prabhupada writes in Manishopishat purport that the dhira understands that he has got nothing to do with the body and mind which he has acquired by chance. Now, have we acquired the body by chance? Prabhupada condemned the chance theory so much. Life comes from life. There was one one scientist. He got the Nobel Prize, James Jacques Monod, for his theory about how everything has come by chance. So, Prabhupada was told about that by Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj. Prabhupada said, if everything came by chance, his theory also came by chance. Why is he getting the Nobel Prize for that?
No.
Everything came by chance except by chance theory. It came by my hard work. Therefore, I guess you get the Nobel Prize.
It's a ridiculous idea. So,
Prabhupada condensed chance so strongly over there. But here Prabhupada, we have got the body and mind by chance. So this chance means what? Actually, when we are not connected with Krishna, when we don't have devotee association, you know, we just get into some association and according to the association we develop desires. It's like the wind, whatever way it blows, if it blows over a sewage, it will activate that smell. If it blows over a garden, it will acquire that smell. So like that, you know, whatever desires we have acquired now, that's just because of whatever association we got into. And that association, how did we get into? We don't know. How would I do? You can say, so the word chance is not used here to indicate the lack of order or lack of plan. But it is to indicate that we have no essential connection with it. Somehow we have to got it. Sometimes the devotees feel that I have very bad conditions from my past. How can I give them up? So, Jayadat Maharaj says that actually, once you wake up, you don't have to bother whether you had a good dream or a bad dream. Just wake up and start with your life. The real problem comes when after waking up you keep thinking about the dream. Then the bad dream can affect us. But if you wake up and start with our real life, then what we were doing in the past doesn't matter to us. Bhaktivinoda Thakur in that Atmanivedan song sings very beautifully. Purva itihasa bhulinu sakala seva sukha peye mane ami to tomara tumi to amara kiya cha paradhane. So he says, purva itihasa bhulinu sakala. All my past history, just forget it, I don't care about it. Seva sukha peye mane. What I will do? I will make my mind drink the nectar of serving you. Amito tomara. Why? Because I am sold out to you. And? Tumito amara. In the Bhakti Sama syndrome, Rupa Goswami described that there are these two levels. Tadiyatva and Madhyatva. Tadiyatva means I am yours. That is the difference between the relationship of Rukmini and Satyabhama. Satyabhama means Krishna is mine. As Rukmini thinks, I am Krishna's. You know? So, for Krishna, which is more dear? Krishna is mine. That is more dear. Tadiyatva. I am yours. Yes, Krishna, I am surrendered to you. So, yes, that is wonderful. But for Krishna, you know, he likes to be controlled by his devotee's love. So, for him, Madhyatva. Madhyatva means, you are mine. That is what Krishna wants. So, actually, according to Gopal Champu as well as Ves Madhav, you know, Radharani is actually Satyabhama and Chandravali is Rukmini. Because Radharani has the mood of controlling Krishna. You know, Gita Govinda describes how Krishna took the dust of Radharani's feet. Why Krishna? Radharani, Krishna is afraid Radharani will go away from me. But whereas Chandravali is always anxious that Krishna may go away from me. So Rukmini has that mood. So the point here is that, you know, first we have to come to Tadiyatva, then we can hope to come to Madhyatva. We cannot first demand, Krishna, you are mine. No. First, I am yours. So that's why first is, Amito Tomar, when we offer ourselves to Krishna, then, Tumito Amar. And then, when we have this relationship, Kikaja Paradhane, what other treasure do I want in life? I have you, my dear Lord, I don't need anything else. You know, in the Brahma Vaivart Purana, this pastime of the Parijat flower is described in much more detail. So when Krishna gets the whole Parijat tree for Satyabhama, Satyabhama comes and tells Rukmini, you know, see, Krishna has got a whole Parijat tree for me. So Rukmini smiles and says, you know, you have got the tree, but I have got Krishna. So when whoever has Krishna, what does it matter whether it's a Parijat flower or a Parijat tree? You know, I know Krishna loves you and Krishna loves me also. She's satisfied. Satyabhama is trying to trigger some envy, transcendental envy in her heart. But Rukmini is not agitated by that. She is satisfied. What else do I want, my dear Lord? So, somehow, we just got into some conditioning and we got some desires now. So, all that we can hope is, just forget what we had, what we were in the past. And just start moving forward in life. And if we can actually do that, then all our past conditions just disappear. They just disappear over a period of time. Then he goes on and describes how actually we are transmigrating in this world. So we get a certain body according to certain kind of desires. What happens when we get a body? Yeah, continue. Who is not ready? Yeah. Ninth verse.
The living entity thus taking another gross body obtains a certain type of ear, eyes, tongue, nose and sense of touch, which are grouped about the mind. He thus enjoys a particular set of sense objects.
Shrotram chakshu sparshanam cha rasanam ghranam eva cha. So, what happens is that we get a particular kind of senses. And once you get a particular kind of senses, those senses determine what will be attractive for us. Now, when we have a particular kind of body, the sense objects captivate our mind. But, you know, we can look at other species, you know, for example, as Prabhupada will always give that example, stool, it repels us. But because the pig has got a kind of sense, the stool attracts him. That means, actually, it may be that the same soul was at one time in a hog's body, now in the human body. But what is happening? Actually, the body covers him in such a way that the body practically creates all his desires. The kind of senses that we have, accordingly we get the desires. So that's why, Shrotram Chakshu Sparsham Cha Rasanam Ghranam Eva Cha Adhishtaya Manaschayam. Adhishta means captain. Who is the captain? Manaschayam. And what does he do? Vishayan Upasevate. He does seva of the Vishaya. He does seva of the sense objects. So, His Holiness Purnachandra Maharaj, who recently passed away, he taught us Bhakti Shastri. So, he took the Bhagavad Gita for us. So, he was telling. So, what happens is that when the conditioned souls get attracted to the sense objects, then if the man gets attracted to a woman, then the woman tells him, Man manabhava mad bhakto madhyaji bham namaskuru. And then he says, has so many other students things to do. Sarva dharvan parityaja mam ekam sarva.
So, Vishayan upasevate. It is seva of the Vishaya like that. And then,
what happens? What is the way out of this? That he will describe in the next two verses. That is actually, so Krishna, at this first level he talks about jnana. You know, in the Uddhav Gita also, Krishna talks about jnana as very important. He says, bhakti will come by the mercy of the Lord, or the mercy of the Vaishnavas. But till bhakti comes, one should cultivate jnana. Because jnana can come by self-effort. Bhakti will come by God's grace. And of course, what will liberate us is bhakti only. But when we will get bhakti, we don't know. But we can't say, I will not practice Krishna consciousness till then. I have to keep practicing. So by our self-effort, we should keep cultivating jnana. We don't depend on jnana, we depend on Krishna only. But we show Krishna our desire to turn towards Him by trying to use our intelligence to act without being affected by maya. So, Krishna discusses in the next two verses, the vision of the ignorant person versus the vision of the enlightened person. Yes?
The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But one whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this.
Yes. Utkramantam sthitam vapi. How the soul leaves the body. Some scientists did some experiment. They kept a dying body in a glass case. And they said, let us see what happens. Let the glass case break. Oh, some scientists said, yes, the glass case broke. So there is a soul. Then other scientists did the experiment and the glass case didn't break only at that. They said, there is no soul. No, this is not the way to prove the existence of the soul. Because the soul can go without breaking. Soul can go without breaking also. Soul is subtler. Even the subtle body is also subtle. So therefore, how the soul leaves the body, ordinary people cannot understand. But what to speak of how the soul leaves the body, they cannot even understand how the soul is in the body. Utkramantam sthitam vapi bhunjanam va gunanvitam. Controlled by the modes, they are enjoying, trying to enjoy. Vimudha nanu pashyanti. Oh, this is a word which comes very often. Mudha. Mudha means fool. Here Krishna using the word vimudha. Vimudha. So, where does the word vimudha come? You know, in the Prahlad Maharaj prayers also it comes. Maya sukham bharam udvahato vimudhan. Maya sukhaya bharam. So much burden of material existence they are carrying. So the Devamrita Maharaj says this. Vimudha is what? Empowered fools. Empowered fools, you know. If you see, people in the software field, they work so hard. Sometimes the devotees also, they feel, I cannot work so hard for Krishna. Why? They are empowered by Maya to work so hard. Vimudha. But the point, they are empowered But that empowerment does not lead to any fruitful result. It does not lead to any good for them, or it doesn't lead to any good for anyone else. Only so, vimudha na anupashyanti. They cannot see this because they are deluded by Maya. And who can see? Pashyanti jnana chakshushah. So Krishna tells, we should cultivate this jnana chakshu, the eyes of knowledge by which we can see. And then in the next verse he describes what does it mean to cultivate this jnana chakshu. We'll conclude with this verse. I don't think we can complete the full chapter. There are 9 more verses. We'll stop with this. Yeah, you can read the next verse. You can read English verse.
The enduring transcendentalists who are situated in self-realization can see all this clearly. But those whose minds are not developed and who are not situated in self-realization cannot see what is taking place, though they may try to.
Yeah. Yatanto yoginaschainam pashyanti atmanyavasthitam. So yatanto. So Krishna is using the word yatanto for both. For the people who can see the soul, people who cannot see the soul. Both endeavor. But what is the difference? Yatanto api akrutatmano nainam pashyanti achetasaha. So he says that one is situated on the platform of the soul. The other is achetasaha. His consciousness is directed. So when can we see the soul? Actually Krishna is interested in saying, who can see the soul? One who is situated on the platform of the soul. But how can I be situated on the platform of the soul without seeing the soul? Yatanto yoginaschainam pashyanti atmanya avasthitam. One is situated on the platform of the soul can see the soul. But how can we situate ourselves on the platform of the soul? By knowledge. That means that this is a very important paradox, which actually we get higher taste when we give up the lower taste. But we can give up the lower taste when we get the higher taste. So where do we start? Because if our minds are caught up, you know, always they are thinking of lust, then even we come and take darshan of Krishna, we will not be able to take darshan. So we cannot get higher taste unless we give up lower taste. But unless we get higher taste, we cannot give up lower taste. So unless we can get some glimpse of the sweetness of Krishna, we cannot actually give up material desire. So where does it start? It starts by Shravanam. We hear, and by hearing we understand. And although we may not experience with our understanding, we force ourselves to apply. So that's why a sadhana bhakti involves voluntary force. Voluntary force. Nobody else is going to force us. Like in a company, the deadlines force us. But in sadhana bhakti, we have to force ourselves. And what will force us? It's our intelligence. That's why we will see in our practical spiritual life that if our shravanam becomes weak, our whole spiritual life becomes weak. As soon as our hearing is not strong, our intelligence is not strong. Once our intelligence is not strong, then the material desires appear much more strong and the battle becomes much more. So, you know, the important thing is we have to hear and make our intelligence convinced that there is actually a higher taste which is far, far happier than what I can ever get in material life. And the lower taste, there might be a little happiness, but it's going to lead to a lot of suffering. So with that conviction, which Prabhupada says in one letter that we should every day sharpen our intelligence by hearing, studying and discussing the philosophy. So sharpen our intelligence, because what happens? Maya creates rust on our intelligence. We know the philosophy, but we keep forgetting it. It goes in the background. So by sharpening, so Gopal Krishna Maharaj once came to Pune, so he was telling us that you know, when we read Prabhupada's books regularly, then what happens? The philosophy stays in the front of our mind, so we always remember it. Otherwise, it goes in the background. So it's there, but it's not there when we want it. When Maya comes, then it's not available. But when we are regularly hearing, then it is there for us. So later on in 15.15, Krishna will tell us very interesting thing. Mattaha smritir jnanam apohanam cha. Sahajara has explained very interestingly why Krishna uses these three words. Mattaha smritir jnanam apohanam cha. I give remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. So he describes that actually he gives knowledge as a spiritual master externally. And depending on how we respond to the knowledge, as a super soul, he will either give remembrance or he will give forgetfulness. That's why spiritual life is very dynamic and alive. If you are receiving the knowledge from the spiritual master nicely, with a desire to learn, a desire to apply, then what will happen? At the right moment, Krishna will give us the remembrance. So Maya is attacking us, Krishna will give us the remembrance. Don't do this, and then you will be saved. On the other hand, if we are not eager to receive that Jnana, if we are maintaining our other desires, then what will happen? At that particular time, Krishna will give us forgetfulness. So, our endeavors to cultivate Jnana are for what? To show Krishna that I sincerely want to serve you. That's why to be situated on the spiritual platform means to apply the Jnana. To apply the Jnana. At our level, we cannot suddenly think, I am not the body, I am the soul. But what would we do at the platform of the soul? We will engage in service. So now we engage in service. And to the extent we engage in service, we will find that we will be able to deal with our material desires in a much more dignified way. Either we reject them or we fulfill them also in a Shastric way, without indulging in anything wrong. And ultimately what will happen? Itanto yogisishyanam pashyanti atmanyavastitam. We become situated at the platform of the soul. Then actually, the temptations just die out gradually. Die out. And then a devotee becomes joyful in his spiritual life. Actually, the main cause of dissatisfaction or agitation in spiritual life is material desires. Material desires, you know, Krishna consciousness is like Krishnanthu's favorite example is like sweet rice. But material desires are like
sand in it.
Just spoils everything. But actually, somehow what happens is we are addicted to eating that sand only. So even in the sweet rice, you serve, where is the sand? We try to get that. But that is the problem. But if we continue, then gradually what happens? We don't give. Well, Krishna is providing us sweet rice, we are mixing sand in it. But if we stop mixing the sand, then only sweet rice will remain. Then it will become very joyful. So, what we can do at our stage is, you know, attack is the best defense. What happens is, if we are trying to preach Krishna consciousness, see what happens, when preaching Krishna consciousness, we are trying to make others remember Krishna. And for that, we ourselves surely have to remember Krishna. Otherwise, how will we make others remember Krishna? So, the best way to make others remember Krishna, make ourselves remember Krishna, is to make others remember Krishna. Prabhupada says, you know, there are the 9 limbs of devotional service. So he says, if you preach, then you are simultaneously involved in 3 limbs. Shravanam, Kirtanam and Smaranam. All 3 simultaneously. And all 3 we do with great concentration. Because we have to speak. So all of you did this wonderful camp. Yesterday I was telling, we were discussing yesterday in the car, that is like sometimes a flash flood comes, you know. There is no water and suddenly the river rises, the water rises and so a flood comes and covers everything. So like this camp was like a flash flood. Then within 15-20 days, everything happened. And it's a great opportunity for all of you to share Krishna's message with so many people. And especially in South India, the culture is there. And yesterday we went to that Ram temple. And if ISKCON had such a property, ISKCON would have such a great thing, isn't it? But that property is there, but it's just lying down and people are, children are playing cricket outside there. So it's sad. I saw that there was a dog sitting there, right in front of the altar. And nobody is doing anything about it. And Prabhuji Rajendra Prabhu was telling me that even his house was originally a part of the land of the temple. The temple land was hundreds of acres. So eventually, when the whoever could grab the land, they grabbed the land. Of course, he had to purchase the land, but basically, you know, we can see through such places how the Vedic culture was there so much. He said that some king had built the whole thing. But now it's just being wasted. So there are a lot of, like, the Madhva Sampradaya, there are a lot of people who are scholarly. They're written big books in Ramay Sampradaya also. But they don't preach much. On the other hand, there are a lot of movements who go out, in Hinduism also there are a lot of movements who do some sort of things. But you know, these people, or if you say Ravi Shankar, Amma, or Sai Baba, or all these people, you know, they don't talk any philosophy at all. And they are having a mass reach. So, we have very philosophical movements, which have very little reach, and we have zero philosophical movements who have huge reach. But ISKCON is the only movement which has solid philosophy and also has a lot of reach. So, what happens is, when people become devotees, because they understand the philosophy, they don't just become pious, they become spiritual. Now this person downstairs yesterday was telling me that he is a follower of Sai Baba, Shirdi Sai Baba. So, because of that he aspires, he has some respect for spiritual people. But you know, that commitment which is there, which never comes. Because without philosophical understanding, the main difference between all these people may be preserving some sort of Hinduism. But within all other organizations, bhakti is just a part of life. Whereas when we come to Krishna consciousness, bhakti becomes our life. And then, actually, if we want to propagate Krishna consciousness, save the society, we need people who are committed. And apart from ISKCON, practically no other organization is doing that. You can say other organizations are also propagating illusion, because most of them, they preach that their own leader is God or things like that. But Prabhupada said that a person who is a demigod worshipper is also in the house of the Vedas. So a person who is a semi-god worshipper.
Semi-god is what?
Semi-god. I am God.
A person who is a semi-god worshipper, he may not be in the house of the Vedas, but he is in the veranda of the Vedas. Why? Why? You know, because even these people, at one level, you know, we can say they are Mayavadis and they are this and that, that's okay.
It's true, but at the same time, you know, because of them also, people are keeping some faith in Vedic culture. Even a person who claims to be Jayadad Maharaj is telling, that even if somebody claims, I am Krishna, so still what is he saying? That means he is saying Krishna is original and I am Krishna. What does that mean? Still Krishna is original. Krishna is the standard. So at least they are not saying, I am Allah.
I am not Jehovah.
So at least by their, even their false claims, whatever they may be, they are actually helping people develop some faith in Vedic culture. Keeping some faith. So in that sense, we don't have to needlessly create conflicts. But at the same time, we have to be clear what is our unique strength. And the kind of preaching that which all of you work so hard to do, if you continue that, the boys are, especially before these boys get affected by either materialism or they get affected by, in South India there is so much Christianity getting converted. Now if people are converting to Christianity for the sake of making spiritual advancement, we have no problem with that. But people are not doing that. They are converting to Christianity for the sake of
money.
And we may wonder, okay, somebody goes to a MNC and becomes a materialist. And he's also, in one sense, becoming materialistic. And somebody becomes Christian and he's also becoming materialist. What is the difference? The difference is that, you know, what happens in Hinduism, or you know, in Sanatana Dharma, if you want to use that word, there is the understanding that there are many ways to God. And so, I may be worshipping Shiva, I may be worshipping Krishna, somebody else is worshipping Shiva. So, no, I will always think that my worship is superior, and the Shiva worshipper will always think my worship is superior. But still, we both understand that these are ways to God. So, they will say that, okay, you will go, this is the faster way, I will say this is the faster way. But we understand that both are ways to God. Yes, you may go partially up to Kailash, they may not go to Vaikuntha, but they are going up. So, what happens is Hindus have this broad-mindedness. You have this way, I have this way. And they apply this broad-mindedness even to people of other religions. Yes. So Hindus would say, yes, we are worshipping Krishna, they are worshipping Allah. So because of this broad-mindedness which is there, because the Vedic culture itself is broad-minded, so we treat other religions with great tolerance and broad-mindedness. But they don't treat us like that. You know, what is other religions they propagate? If you have seen, people who get converted, Christians, they will not take prasad. Why they don't take prasad? Because they are taught, they are indoctrinated that Jehovah, or if they are not, because of Jesus Christ, he is the only God. And everybody else is a garb taken by the devil to take people away from the real God. So that's why they don't think that they are taking Krishna Prasad. They think it is the remnants of the devil. In fact, you know, Tirupati Balaji, this is a big controversy that happened at one time. That just a few years ago, in Tirupati Balaji, they had all these people cut their hair. So the pujaris over there are also very intelligent. What they do is, they collect all the hair and they export the hair. Why? Because people want to make wigs. And, you know, India is the world's biggest hair exporter. And Tirupati Balaji is the biggest hair exporter agency over there. They make a huge amount of money by that. So what happened So many of these wigs, popular wigs which are made, they are made from the hair which comes from Tirupati. So, in Israel, in Jew faith is in Israel. So there many of these, just like we have garland seva which Matajis come and do. So there also they had many ladies who are doing different services in there. They don't call it church, they call it synagogue. The Jews call it synagogue. So in that. And then many of these ladies, when they grow old, they wear wigs. And then they came to know that these wigs have come from the temple of Tirupati. And then the chief of that synagogue, he announced that anybody who is wearing the wigs, which have come from the fruits of idolatry, they will not be allowed to even enter the synagogue to do the service. So that is how intolerant they are. That is how intolerant they are. In fact, you know, they have the history. When Muhammad came back to from Mecca to Medina, from Medina to Mecca, the first thing that he did was, he went to Kaaba and destroyed all the idols over there. Of course, those idols were false gods. And in that sense, they can be destroyed. Like, you know, in India now they have temples of Rajnikant and Madhuri Dikshit and Amitabh Bachchan.
Statues,
you know. No, not a statue. They make temples. Mm-hmm. Now there are 12 temples of Amitabh Bachchan in Calcutta. Those temples are called as Kaliyug Ke Ram Ka Mandir. Now, naturally, you know, if you have an ordinary human being who is not even following basic regulative principles, you know, Madhuri Dikshit is basically a prostitute. You make her into a Devi, naturally, even we will feel we want to destroy that temple. So, Muhammad's anger can be justified in that sense. But the Muslims have taken that to mean that all worship of forms is wrong. That's why when the Muslims would conquer any territory in the medieval time, the first thing they would do is go and destroy temples. Destroy so many temples like that. So, now it's not that the modern Muslims have changed their mind. Actually, there are surely broad-minded Muslims. There are broad-minded Christians. There's no doubt about that. But it's not that they are the mainstream. See, in Hinduism also there may be some fanatical Hindus who may want to go and kill all Muslims. But they are not the mainstream. They are a very minority. Whereas, especially among the Muslims in India and the Christians in India, these hardliners, the fundamentalists, are the majority. They are the majority. And because of that, what happens is, yes, when people are Hindus also they are in Maya. When people become Christians they are also in Maya. But if they become Christians, they become hostile to Krishna consciousness. Whereas in their Hindus, they are receptive to Krishna consciousness. So, from the absolute point of view, you know, it's not that Christianity and Hinduism and Islam are enemies. No, we are all wanting to go back to, there are all ways to go back to Krishna, to the spiritual world. But, so our enemy is not this religion or that religion, our enemy is materialism, is atheism. But sometimes, materialism takes the garb of religion. So now, they are not propagating Christianity actually. They are propagating materialism. And they are propagating a brand of materialism which makes people hostile to Krishna consciousness. Therefore, I yesterday in the camp, I was seeing the boys, many of the boys are so innocent. You know, and sometimes they get converted and they become so offensive, so hostile. Gaurangpur was telling that he had gone for a jail program. I'll conclude with this. Gaurangpur had gone for a jail program. And there he saw, in the jail, you know, there were three people, wearing tilak and tulsi mala. And they had red tilak. And he was surprised. He was wondering whether the jail authorities have called two people. So I am going to give the first lecture, they are going to give the second lecture or something. But then afterwards, he looked at their dress and he understood they were prisoners over there. So then he asked them, so you didn't know how to ask, you have to ask them. So then he said, that actually, there were some, they were from the Hindu Janajagrati Sangha. So,